Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today we'll take our first look at the disaster area formerly known as the Gulf of Mexico and bordering states. We'll hear from two independent journalists who have done fine work reporting the true extent of the disaster. This disaster is far, far worse than BP and its shills would have you believe. And by shills, I'm referring to the contractors BP has hired to hide the damage, the corporate-controlled media, and, alas, the federal government. I hope you'll stay tuned. The two journalists we'll hear from are Anne McClintock, whose official job is English professor, and Dar Jamail. Dar distinguished himself in his reporting of the U.S. occupation of Iraq. We'll hear portions of an interview Dori Smith had with him in August for her radio program, Talk Nation Radio. Dar ably paints the broad picture of what the heck is going on in the Gulf and why is it going on. But let's start with Anne McClintock. A fine, long article by her was published in Counterpunch on August 23rd. It's called Slow Violence and the BP Cover-Ups. I'm going to focus on one section of the piece called the CTE Cover-Up. CTEH, all caps. That's the name of an environmental consulting firm now working in Louisiana. The heartbreaking thing about the story is not just that some small firm may be corrupt to a certain extent. The heartbreaking thing is that the executive branch of the government is sharing the same bed as CETA and BP. The Environmental Protection Agency had already disgraced itself soon after 9/11 by declaring the air in Lower Manhattan fit to breathe, which they knew was a lie. Hundreds or thousands of first responders are now dying or sick from lung disease so that the New York Stock Exchange could reopen without delay. Well, the EPA is disgracing itself again in the Gulf region. And so is the Coast Guard, which is dumping the toxic dispersant Corexit in the dark of night to hide the extent of the damage BP has caused. I find this, words fail me, let's just say infuriating. Needless to say, the Coast Guard does not go about aiding corporate crime and making environmental disasters even worse without orders from high up. I'll just note for the record that the highest-ranking executive of both the EPA and the Coast Guard is named Barack H. Obama. I've edited and condensed Anne McClintock's story for radio. Here it goes. The Gulf crisis is not over. Slow violence and the BP cover-ups. Three vanishing acts are being played out in the Gulf. The disappearing of the oil from the ocean surface by Corexit, the disappearing of the story by the media blockade, and the disappearing from view of the shadowy private contractors who are making a mint helping BP and the Coast Guard keep a cover on the cleanup. Sidebar comment, and today we'll hear about one of those contractors, a consulting firm that is in bed both with the government and with BP. The CTE cover-up. The author is talking to an engineer named Steve, who is assisting in the Gulf cleanup in Louisiana. Back to the text. As we talked, the nightly muffled thrup-thrup of distant helicopters began. A number of people had told me about these strange night flights, as helicopters and planes headed out on mysterious missions. I asked Steve where they were going. They're looking for oil, he said. The helicopters go out first at dusk. When they spot oil, they radio the GPS locations back to the Coast Guard. Then between 1 and 3 in the morning, the planes go out and spray the oil with dispersants. Why do they go out at night? I ask. They are hiding the oil with dispersants, Steve said. They don't want people to know how much oil there is out there. And they don't want people to know how much dispersants they are spraying. It's one of the big secrets down here. As it happens, Steve knows a good deal about dispersants. He now works in the Gulf for a company dealing with environmental toxicity and health hazards, CTE. CTE is short for Center for Toxicology and Environmental Health. It specializes in toxicology, risk assessment, occupational health, and response to releases of chemicals. CTE is quietly monitoring the levels of chemical toxicity of the oil spill and its impact on the health of the workers involved in the cleanup. CTE is part of the Joint Unified Command based in Houma, Louisiana, where BP shares its office with the Coast Guard, and CITE is being paid by BP. CITE, in other words, is monitoring the possible toxic effect on workers of the chemicals BP has unleashed, and it is doing this at BP's expense. CITE is being paid by BP to check up on BP. This is a conflict of interest so flagrant it is like a murder suspect hiring the forensic experts who will examine the murder scene. CITE has, to boot, a consistent record of unsavory conflict of interest cases, where they have ruled favorably every time on behalf of their corporate clients. CITE was hired by a coal company after it unleashed a massive coal ash spill in the Tennessee Valley. CITE declared everything hunky-dory. Murphy Oil Refinery hired CITE after spilling 1 million gallons into a community in St. Bernard's Parish, Louisiana. CITE found nothing there for anyone to worry about. Now, down in the Gulf, BP is paying CITE to monitor the toxic levels of the air and water. As Nicholas Cheremisinoff, a former Exxon chemical engineer and expert on pollution prevention, says, this means there is, quote, a huge incentive for them to underreport, unquote. This also means that if anyone sues BP for health problems caused by toxic exposure to oil or chemicals, CITE will be the expert witness called in on BP's behalf. This crazy conflict of interest carousel, where BP pays CITE and the EPA relies on CITE data to monitor BP, is so flagrant that Representative Lois Capps of California has formally requested that President Obama relieve BP of responsibility for protecting the health of workers and local residents. CITE and EPA underplay the hazards, but down in the Gulf, people are getting sick. Some men working on the oil spill have become ill and some hospitalized, though we don't know the full extent because sick workers are contracted by BP not to talk to the media. BP could well stand for beyond principle. In a particularly nefarious act of cost-cutting and labor control, BP has hired prison inmates to do the cleanup, refusing to let them wear respirators, as this makes it visible that conditions are hazardous. Nor can they carry cell phones, lest they document the damage. Forced labor, slavery deja vu. And there's an extra perk for BP. Private companies like BP, who use people on work release from prison, get tax rebates of $2,400 for every worker they employ. I heard many stories of people getting sick. I talked to the wife of a Vietnamese fisherman. My husband has had chest problems ever since he went to work for BP, she told me. A lot of people are getting sick, and when the south wind blows, my asthma gets bad, she said. In an internet cafe, I overheard a young man talking loudly into his cell about a blistering rash on his chest. The doctor thinks it's overexposure to chemicals, he said. And that's the end of this section of Ann McClintock's fine and long article, Slow Violence and the BP Cover-Ups. We'll be getting to other sections of this piece in later editions of this show.
Death comes Louisiana, the slick black and brown, a dark storm descending on this beautiful town. Death comes Louisiana, a slick black and brown, and that oil keeps bubbling out. Death comes slowly to this fisherman's bay. There ain't no boats leaving the dock today. Death comes slowly to this fisherman's bay, and that oil keeps bubbling out. Death comes slow to birds who fly no more. They once filled the sky, now they're dead on the shore. Death comes to the birds who don't fly no more, and that oil keeps bubbling out. Death comes to the shrimp who once filled this sea. The water once pure, now is diseased. Death comes to the shrimp who once filled this sea, and that oil keeps bubbling out. Death comes to the plants that lived in the sea. These plants once made air for you and me to breathe. Death comes to these plants that lived in the sea, and that oil keeps bubbling out. Death comes to Louisiana with slick black and brown, a dark storm descending on this beautiful town. Death comes to Louisiana, a slick black and brown, and that oil keeps bubbling out. Men kill this land for money and oil. I hope that they die for these crimes that we've told. And the bodies are buried deep in that soil, where that oil keeps bubbling out. Where that oil keeps bubbling out.
Of course, CETE and the Coast Guard are just the tip of the iceberg, which is a pretty good metaphor, as now much of the oil is underneath the water. The dispersant corrects it doesn't disperse the oil horizontally, it disperses it vertically, from the surface all through the Gulf down to the seabed, thus killing marine life at every level. Had the oil been allowed to float on the surface, it would have been much easier to remove, and it would have damaged the ecosystem far less. However, that would have increased BP's financial liability. And, of course, the dispersant, Corexit, is 50 times more toxic than the oil itself, which is plenty bad enough, as we saw in Juneau with the Exxon Valdez spill some years back. Around 1965, singing satirist Tom Lehrer released a song titled Pollution. In a not very convincing Mexican accent, the singer gave health advice to foreigners visiting the United States. Quote, "Don't drink the water and don't breathe the air," unquote. To which we may now add, "and don't eat the seafood." Here's Dar Jamail with Dory Smith.
Dar Jamail, welcome.
Thanks, Dory.
Just tell us what you're seeing as you tour the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, it's really amazing to be down here in the Gulf and seeing everything firsthand and seeing the destruction and the devastation, and then have that contrasted with what we see in the media, what we see coming from the Obama administration, because I'll spare wasting time on that. We all know that they're trying to spin this as over and the oil's gone or mostly recovered and things are getting back to normal down here, and it's the opposite. Just yesterday, for example, we went out from Port Fouchon, which is down nearby Grand Isle in southeast Louisiana, and we went out to several islands out there to inspect what kind of shape they're in, what kind of shape the marsh is in. And we're in Sheen literally all day. We traveled probably about 80 miles by boat round trip through the day. And we were in Sheen nonstop. And we went to a couple of the islands and got out and walked around on them. And it was nothing but destruction. Tar balls everywhere, tar mats, some of them probably 4 feet across all over the shore, crabs crawling on them and such. We went in and found inland pools that were just completely sodden with literally brown liquid oil floating on top of these pools inside the marsh grasses. The bottoms, the mud is just black with oil. And we went in and dug around a bit. And when you stir the stuff up, it smells so intense you have to just leave because you get dizzy. It smells just awful. And this is the situation out there. And again, all the coastlines of many of these islands are just completely burned up with oil. The oil hits the marsh, it turns it black and brown, and it kills it. It starts eroding promptly, and that's everywhere you see. Long rows of white PVC pipe that they use to try to hold in place the sorbent boom. With the boom, over time, slips out of those pipes and washes up on the marsh and is actually up above the marsh, not doing anything other than bringing the oil that's already in the absorbent boom into the marsh further. And that's what we saw everywhere we went. Driving back into port, we passed over another large sheen of oil, but this one that had clearly been hit with dispersants. There was the kind of telling white foam across the top, and we have photos of all of this, and we'll be posting them before too long.
Now, you've seen aircraft dispensing the dispersant in the waters in the Gulf of Mexico?
I haven't seen it personally. I mean, it's a known, there's Coast Guard photos of it. This is what they've been doing from the very beginning out at the source. But even more recently, this is what they've been doing inland. And not so much aircraft, but actually we've been talking to a lot of fishermen in Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, and Louisiana, all saying the same thing. Many of them eyewitnesses to basically out-of-state contractors coming in, going out at night in boats, using a particular type of boat called a Carolina skiff, which is basically just a work boat, and going out with tanks, 375-gallon white tanks filled with dispersant, and going out at night and spraying oiled areas that are found by the fishermen who generally populate the Vessels of Opportunity program, who are supposedly out there finding the oil and cleaning it up. Well, basically what it looks like is happening is BP is basically using the fishermen in the VOO program to find the oil, and then they call in the coordinates, and then they're instructed to leave and typically not allowed to clean it up. This is another part of the program. And then once they get away, either shortly thereafter or that night, these out-of-state contractors come in the Carolina skiffs and basically spray the area. They can spray up to 150 feet from the boat with dispersant. And then the fishermen in the VOO program will come out the next day, go to the same place, and they'll find the oil sunk. And then what's left is this kind of pasty, white, foamy residue on the surface. And we'll be posting photos of this as well. But it's very, very clear what's happened. And then oftentimes when it's in shallower water, when the oil goes down to the bottom, as the day progresses and gets hotter, that oil then bubbles back up to the surface.
Why do you think it is that the government fell for this idea of, you know, saturating the Gulf of Mexico with this dispersant?
Well, I don't think it's really a question of the government falling for it. I think it's a fact of the government being complicit in it. This does not happen without the government helping make it happen, and that's been clear from the very start. BP has taken the lead on this. They've gone from claiming no oil was coming out of the damaged well to 1,000 barrels a day to 5,000, and then ratcheted on up, and now we know it's somewhere closer to 100,000 a day that were coming out. And all through that process, they would make an announcement, and it would simply be parroted by the U.S. government, usually in the form of the sock puppet of Thad Allen. That's just one example. We talk about the dispersants and the Corexit and the toxicity of it. The EPA had done its own studies in the past, and we wrote about this about a month ago, where even according to some of the EPA's own studies on Corexit, when they did a test of it with shrimp, 50% of the shrimp exposed to a very dilute amount of it died immediately, and then most of the rest of the shrimp died shortly thereafter. So the EPA understands this. And then since that time, we've had several EPA whistleblowers, the best known of which being Hugh Kaufman, talking about how horribly toxic this stuff is. It's an industrial solvent that's just terrible. I mean, the list of how it will impact you is about a page long. So that information's there, yet we have the EPA as an organization and the rest of the entire government involved in this situation, including NOAA, OSHA, NIOSH. We can go down a long list. Are basically just helping BP carry out their plan. The Coast Guard has repeatedly denied involvement in spraying dispersants. Even at one point, I quote a Coast Guard fellow saying that no dispersants whatsoever have been sprayed in Florida, despite I have several eyewitnesses who've seen the C-130s come in off the coast of Destin, Florida, Okaloosa, Florida, and spray it all through the month of July, well past the deadline of July 16 when they claimed no more was being sprayed. So we have government complicity in this thing all the way through, and I think, you know, one of the crown jewels of that complicity would be Obama coming down to the coast and taking his daughter out into the water for a photo op to try to show people that everything's just fine. You know, and if you go down the coast a few dozen miles or however far it is from Panama City to Destin, you're going to find giant fish kills on the bottom. You're going to find fish kills so intense as of a week ago that they're closing public boat ramps. You're going to find tar balls still washing up to the beach. I just got more pictures right now from a contact over there. Dead wildlife, massive amounts of dead fish floating around undersea on the bottom of the area over there. And yet we have Obama who's basically putting himself in a position where he's basically acting like a really good PR flack for BP.
You're listening to Talk Nation Radio, an interview with journalist Dar Jamail. I'm Dory Smith. In late July, FDA and NOAA declared Gulf seafood safe. While most major networks were interviewing happy fishermen glad to be back to work, Dar Jamail was touring much further into the region to speak with those who said they saw the use of dispersants far beyond what the government had admitted. The government agencies had been giving fisheries the go-ahead prior to having a specific test for the dispersants.
Yes, the seafood from the Gulf of Mexico is safe. It's as safe as we can make this.
Gina Yatalo with NOAA. During the same interview, she admitted they were still working on a test for the dispersant.
We're developing a chemical test to analyze for the dispersant in the seafood samples.
FDA spokesperson Megan Scott answered our questions via email saying, quote, "We cannot give a blanket statement that all seafood from all Gulf waters is safe." We asked Dar Jamail to comment on the statement of Commerce Secretary Gary Locke that, quote, "We need to let the American people know that the seafood being harvested from the Gulf is safe to eat."
Well, I guess I would like the opportunity to take this individual and his family, maybe he has kids, to this inland lagoon we found yesterday, and they can swim in the oil, and they can swim in the sheen, and the vile odors that are in the off-gassing that's happening in there. We saw crabs crawling all through it. They can eat some of those crabs. They can fry them up. You know, that, I guess that would be my response. It's infuriating to me to see these people. I mean, that individual, he and so many other people in the Obama administration like him are literally criminally complicit. They are basically helping set the table so that people are going to be eating extremely contaminated seafood. And when we're talking about Corexit, it's carcinogenic, it's mutagenic. If you're a pregnant woman and you're exposed to it, your fetus will die, period. That's how toxic this stuff is. It's a neurotoxin, it causes respiratory system depression, just a myriad of things that this does. And they're not even testing for it. And their test for oil is a smell test. And they pick up a fish or a crab or a shrimp, and if they can't smell something, then they call it good. It's part of their campaign to show everybody that everything's okay. We can get back to business as usual. BP can keep drilling out in the Gulf, trying to get people to come back down to the Gulf Coast because the economies are in shambles because of this. A big part of that is trying to show that the seafood is okay to eat. And that's just this one aspect of this giant PR campaign that BP and the government have been running to try to show people, oh, look, everything's great. We can just get back to business as usual. Now go back to sleep. And I think that that's part of what this whole seafood situation is. And I think it's probably one of the most insidious parts because it's literally going to be endangering the lives directly of untold numbers of people across the United States.
Dar, can you confirm the use of the Corexit dispersant in Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana?
Dispersants have been used in all four of those states without a doubt. I've talked to VU program fishermen who have been eyewitnesses to dispersants being used either by airplane or by boat or both in all four states. And I've also spoken with people who've been exposed to them and are suffering the health effects from that in all four states as well. So there is no question that they've been used sometimes extremely heavily in all four states.
And why do you think it is that this is going on? Why is the Corexit, which you're saying is a neurotoxin, dangerous to pregnant women, a carcinogen, why is it being used, really?
It's being used to hide the oil, the amount of oil, for several reasons. One, BP will be fined for every barrel. The final estimate that the government decides is the amount that was gushed into the Gulf, and then the amount recovered, they're going to be charged per barrel and a liability for that amount. And so it's all about protecting BP's bottom line, that the less oil that they estimate and the less oil that they find, the less fines BP is going to have to pay. It's just that simple. Also, kind of dovetailing into that is the less visible oil there is, then the less work there is for the VU program, and the faster BP can get that shut down, also minimizing their liability. So we've seen the response workers' numbers go from around a maximum of about 45,000 to now it's well below 30,000 and being chopped down by the day. And so I'm speaking directly with VU people who are going out in their boats know where the oil is and literally being called off it and not allowed to go collect it. So that if they can go a few days in an area like what happened in Mississippi recently and say, well, there's just not a whole lot being found, which is total nonsense because these guys are finding it. And then, as I said before, they're not being allowed to clean it up. Instead, they're going out, sending private contractors out to sink it with this person. That basically means at the end of the day, BP is going to start shutting down these programs in different states, as Mississippi has done, and paying out less money for the response effort. And at the end of the day, it's going to help them with their bottom line. And so that's what this whole thing is about.
You also write in your Truth Out piece that not much money has been paid out.
No, of this so-called $20 billion compensation fund, which is a joke of an amount, because when someone loses their entire livelihood or dies early because they've been exposed to dispersant, or we've had four suicides so far directly related to this disaster and counting, what's that worth? I mean, how do you put a price tag on that? You know, when someone's entire livelihood, they live down on the coast, they're a third-generation shrimper, their kids are into it now, all their community is there, and now you've basically wiped that out for an indefinite amount of time. How much is that worth? Is that $1 million? Is that $2 million? To put an overall price tag on this thing, I think, is also degrading and insulting to people down here. One thing they've tried to do, the Obama administration puts Ken Feinberg in charge of this fund. He's being paid by BP. He will not disclose the amount he is being paid by BP. And is basically acting as this kind of apologist and intermediary between Obama administration and BP. And in the end of the day, he's completely complicit in both, and particularly with BP. And so as a result of that, people who are filing claims, so far, most of these people have not seen one dime. I have yet to talk to one person who said, yes, they caused this damage. Yes, they showed up and helped me determine it was this amount. I agreed that was a fair amount for me to be compensated. And then they have paid me or started to pay me. I have not met one person in all four states so far down here that can say that. We went out in a boat yesterday from southeast Louisiana. They had opened up some of the areas down there for shrimping. And we literally, right when we pulled out of the dock, we passed two shrimpers coming in. And our captain asked one of them, hey, how'd you do? He said, I didn't catch anything, not a thing. He said, well, how much do you usually catch? And the guy said, 1,000 pounds. Shortly after that, we passed another guy coming in, and he caught 18 shrimp, 1/8. And these are people that usually go out and catch hundreds, if not sometimes 1,000 pounds on a big day. And they're not catching anything. And we were out in bays that were open, not one shrimper out there. Because people know, look, I'm not going to go shrimp because I'm probably not going to catch anything. And if I do, there's basically no market for it. You know, most folks wouldn't eat anything that comes out of there. It's so toxic and it's so bad down here that literally people out of Mississippi are going out and shrimping and they're not catching anything, despite the feds opening the water. And I think that's one of the scariest parts of this whole situation, is not only do we just have complete deregulation for the corporations to do what they want, but we have a government that's basically acting as apologists for them and helping them pretend like this thing isn't so bad, and we can open up this area for fishing, and people can eat the food that comes out of it, and it couldn't be much more toxic than it is right now. It's a wasteland in a lot of the areas down here, and we've got the pictures to prove it, and the facts, and yet we have a government that's trying to basically race seafood back out on the market, and that's a really scary situation. I mean, it really just underscores the fact you cannot trust this government for anything with this situation down here in the Gulf. Not one thing. They have proven themselves as complicit and untrustworthy as BP has from the very beginning.
Thanks for listening. Thanks to TalkNationRadio.org. You'll find links to Dory's complete interview with Dara Jamail and to Anne McClintock's complete article on the show's website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. It'll get to my non-carborundum. Don't take any wooden nickels, and ciao.